Some crimes are never forgotten. Others are lost to history. Those are the ones we focus on in Crimes of the Centuries, a history meets true crime podcast revisiting murders, trials, and frauds that once dominated headlines. I'm Amber Hunt, your host and a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. If you like true crime that feels both cinematic and historical, find Crimes of the Centuries wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the Investing in Real Estate podcast with Clayton Morris. This is the show where we focus on buy and hold real estate. Why do we do it? We do it for the purposes of creating passive income and legacy wealth for you and your family. If you're interested in finding your freedom number, come over to our website at morrisinvest.com/freedom and download your free financial freedom cheat sheet today. How do you structure seller financing? That is today's show. Let's dive right in. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Investing in Real Estate show. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
And this is the show where we talk about building legacy wealth, buy and hold real estate for the purposes of creating passive income. And I'm super excited because today we're going to talk about seller financing, which is a really powerful strategy to help you go out there perhaps and get your first rental property, particularly, I guess, you know, if you don't have any money to work with. We hear from a lot of investors that we speak with that just don't have the cash. They don't have the means to pick up that first rental property. And this is a killer way to do it, right?
It sure is. And so I was talking to an investor recently, talking about how, you know, sometimes you offer a discounted price for a property and the owner's like, no, I can't take that low price. And I said, well, what about seller financing? And this person didn't know what that meant. And I thought, well, this is a good thing to talk about on our podcast because we talk about sort of, I want to say like a buffet of resources for acquiring rental properties. And in our house, we use all of them. We have, I think, one or two deals we've done seller financing. We've talked about using your 401k, using your Roth IRA, using private notes. And so this is just one of the ways that we build out a large portfolio of rental real estate. And so I will give you our disclaimer. We don't have a way to make money off of you doing this. We are not financial advisors. We're just a family that invests in real estate and does this show to help other families learn how we do it because we've had some great success doing this and building up our rental portfolio in order to have passive income in our house so that we don't have to work for the man. Right?
That's right. That's right. And so a few little housekeeping things before we dive into today's show. We're wearing some fun shirts today. I've got a shirt on. If you're watching the video feed of this, you can do that. You can go to iTunes and subscribe, or you can check it out on our YouTube channel. But so I've got a fun shirt on today. It says Goals at Work. And which one do you have on there?
Mine says Attitude is Everything, although my microphone's in the way. So let me stand up. There you go.
Attitude is Everything is what her says. And the reason we're wearing these shirts today is because I wanted to promote and help a friend. Now, a friend of the show and one of our investors who worked with our company, Morris Invest, I think about a year, a half to maybe 2 years ago, and has acquired a number of rental properties. Well, recently, he sent us a note in the office and said, hey, because of the passive income that I've now been able to create in my life and because of the properties that I've purchased, I've been able to take on this passion project that I've wanted to take on for a while, which was creating this t-shirt company, all around taking action and creating, you know, sort of goal-oriented lifestyle, really inspirational t-shirt messages. And so he created this company, and these are some of the first shirts off the line. GVP, called Good Vibes Promoter, is the name of the company. We'll link to it in our show notes page for this episode, but I'm super excited about that. How great is that?
I know, it's so awesome. Because sometimes when people ask about building a real estate empire, they think, well, I don't really want to work in real estate. That's not my passion. And I say, well, yeah, you know, you don't have to be a realtor or actually painting walls. You can be a passive investor and then also pursue your dream, like Clayton's dream of being an underwear model. He can still do that on the side.
Right.
While investing in real estate, right, honey?
That's right. That's where I bring all the good, all the big dollars come in. It's for my underwear promotions.
Right.
Yeah. So Good Vibe Promoter is the GVP. We're going to put this in our show notes page for this episode over at morrisinvest.com. So go there, support them. It's so great that one of our investors took on a passion project and thrilled. And by the way, the t-shirts are really well made and they're very comfortable.
They're really comfortable and they fit nice. I don't usually like sort of, you know, those giveaway t-shirts you get that say like gum company or whatever when you're at a when you're at a concert. I'm like, I'm not going to wear this. But this is, it really fits nicely for women. I'm picky about t-shirts and I really like the fit of it.
Yeah. So, hey, congratulations, Keith. Thanks for taking action. And thank you for sharing this with us. We're really excited about that. So,
and also to just wear around something that speaks to your own values.
My son
is awesome.
I put it on this morning at breakfast. My son was, you know, just started learning how to read and he was reading the shirt and he says, goals at work. And I said, yep, I'm at work, working towards our goals. And I love that. So the message.
As opposed to once I was on a boardwalk and saw a shirt that said, don't ask me for S. That's that guy's values.
Right. Yeah, a little bit of a different value proposition from Keith and his company. So anyway, housekeeping out of the way. Let's dive in and talk about seller financing. The idea behind seller financing is the idea that the seller might not want to sell the house and get hit with capital gains, right? So why would someone want to sell a house with seller financing? You've heard Tom Wheelwright here on our show talk about you can save on capital gains if you're not selling the house all at once. By doing seller financing, you can structure it any number of ways. And as a seller, it's very attractive to maybe a tired landlord that has 10 properties and just is around retirement and just wants to unload these properties. Well, for them to sell them all at once, that'll be a huge tax hit for that individual.
Right. Well, there are a couple reasons, mm-hmm. actually. That's only one reason to do it. Another reason may be the buyer can't get what they want for the house, or the seller, rather, can't get what they want for the house. Like, they want to sell it for a higher price, but the market is not such that they will ever get that price, right?
Right.
But what they need is some cash out of that, and then maybe they can keep it and make a little money just by getting out from under the debt, which is that monthly mortgage payment. So for instance, I had a client when I was being a little bit more active using my real estate license who wanted to just retire. The taxes were too high in the town he lived in, and he wanted out of this house. Well, it was a three-family home, and it could rent for a pretty penny. He just wanted out from the taxes and out from the mortgage payment so that he could go and retire in South Carolina. And so what would have worked great for him, and I just couldn't talk him into doing it because he was a little too skittish about it, but I still think about this guy and think that that would have been his solution, was to take someone could have said, hey, I'll offer you, let's say, $20,000 down, and then I assume the note. That means I pay the mortgage. The mortgage now comes to me. I pay that and the taxes as well. And so then you just get a check in the mail every month. You pay that mortgage, but you walk away with an actual sizable down payment. And so that's how we did one of ours, right?
Right. Yeah, we did. We did one of our properties in Pennsylvania, right, is the mm-hmm. one of the rental properties that we had. And she didn't want to have to take tax hit on the property. And so we offered a down payment on this property on this. It was recently renovated.
Single family
in a small little Pennsylvania town. And I had I found it on Craigslist, actually. And I thought, here she will, you know, she's willing to do seller financing. It's not necessarily a question. It's not necessarily something you're going to see in a listing if you're on Craigslist that someone might say seller financing, but sometimes they do. But you could just call them up and ask that question. And as part of a strategy, if you're an investor trying to find distressed properties, you're on the phone trying to find deals, that's a question that you should really ask anybody who agrees to sell their house. Yes, I'm interested in selling this house. It's been a burden for me. I live in California. It's in Colorado. I don't want to deal with it anymore. Great. Well, would you consider doing seller financing on it? In fact, I'll even pay you more for the property. See, why does that make sense? Well, because now I can come to you with a small down payment. I'm willing to pay you maybe more than you actually wanted. You wanted $40,000 for it. Well, what if I could give you $43,000 for the house? And we'll do seller financing. You can structure these, you know, as 3 to 7 years. Maybe I could pay you for 3 to 7 years to pay the house back. In fact, what's the average current going rate for interest rates? Is it 4%, 3.75%? What if, Mary, I could offer you 4% or 5% interest for 7 years? I'm going to only put down, I'll put down $5,000. And now I get this property and I'm able to cash flow well above that on the backs of this seller. I mean, the idea is that this seller is now carrying, I want to say carrying the burden, but they are, the seller takes the role of the lender. Instead of giving cash to the buyer, the seller extends this credit to the buyer for the purchase of this home. And it's, that's what we were able to do in Pennsylvania with that property.
Right. Okay. So people might hear this and think, well, wait, I'm trusting a stranger to now pay my mortgage payment? No way, Jose. But you actually close this with an escrow company, mm-hmm. and you do have formal liability now as the new owner. You are now the owner. The tax bills now go to your house. So the city thinks that you're the owner, right? It's not like, oh, okay, just go away and I'll pay you money every month to pay your mortgage. Maybe, right? You actually have to do it. There's a properly structured note. It closes at the title company.
Right. Yeah. And you know, just the bottom line is that Mary, the seller, becomes the bank. Just think of it that way, right? She was probably putting out the property on the open market thinking that they, you know, they were going to try to sell it the traditional way. Maybe they're even using a realtor, you know, who knows? Or they were considering using a realtor.
She tried this one deal we're talking about. She tried to use a realtor mm-hmm. and she couldn't get what she wanted for it. She was recently widowed and she wasn't up to taking care of it anymore. So she didn't want to take a loss for it and she didn't want to take care of it anymore. So it was a good deal for her because she got a big chunk of change, which she needed now that she was in her retirement and alone. And she then got cash flow every month where we would, you know, get the money to her. It would arrive. She wanted a proper check. So we automated that through our bank so that it was sent out every month. She got it, she cashed it, and then she made her mortgage payment to the mortgage company.
Right. So there are a couple of things and reasons why this is so great, right? You can structure this any way that you can imagine. So I mentioned one way, which is sort of a traditional note way, right? 3 to 7 years. Say, hey, you know, Mary, I'm going to pay this house. I'm going to pay you. We're going to structure this note for 5 years. I'm going to pay you 5% interest, and I'm going to put $5,000 down on this $80,000 house. So she's now getting a check for $5,000. She gets to walk away from this house. Hallelujah. I don't need to deal with this property anymore.
And that $5,000 was probably more than she would have got had she sold it on the open market and then had to pay off her mortgage and pay the realtor and the taxes, right?
Right.
So,
right.
I mean, it's attractive to the seller because they, you know, when you look at your HUD statement, you see like this house is selling for $80,000, but $70,000 is what's left on the mortgage. $8,000 goes to the realtor, $2,000 for taxes. Probably she was only going to get $1,000 or $2,000. But instead, we're saying here's a lump sum of cash right. for you to A, assume this risk, right, of now being the lender, and B, let us now work our way into owning this. And then after a certain amount of years, then we own it, not you. You're done. Goodbye. You're paid off.
Right. And so let me just kind of go into a couple of these things. First of all, it's great for her. Because again, the capital gains issue. Now she can spread the sale of the house out over 5 years. You could even go higher. You could say 10 years. And some people, even retired investors, understand the value of it even being structured for 15 years. Because then they can actually pass that on to their children and they're not getting hit with that capital gains in their lifetime. They could structure it as a 30-year note if you wanted to. There was one woman I was talking with about a property in Mississippi. And she owned like 30 properties. And she was willing to do seller financing. And she said, look, I'm 89 years old. She was willing to do a 30-year note. And you think, well, that's ambitious, right? She's going to live to be 120 years old. Well, no, she understood. She understood what would happen, right? That burden would not pass on to her children. The capital gains burden wouldn't pass on to her children. But the value of the note would. It's a brilliant move for her, right? So that tax, the tax that the family would have to pay wouldn't be there. But the note, she could transfer that to her children, and the value of that asset would transfer.
Yeah.
You know, that's what Tom Wheelwright has talked about here on the show, which is – it's great, right? That's a really – killer strategy. So another thing I want to just talk about there is, so that's one way, right? Just sort of a traditional bank note. I'm going to put down $5,000. Maybe we'll carry it for 5 years, 7 years. Okay. And we're going
to
do five.
But before we do that, why don't we talk about the value to the buyer though? Because we've laid out why the seller would want to do this, but why would you as the investor want to do this? It may be obvious, but I just want to touch this home before we...
That's a good point. Well, why? Because you don't have the cash. So you might have $5,000 to put down or $2,000, but you don't have $100,000 to buy the house. She is interested in selling this house. Maybe she's doing it for sale by owner. You don't want to get a mortgage. You don't want to also then get a mortgage on the property and, you know, have to carry that burden. But you could do it this way, and you're able to get into this property because you might have terrible credit. So you might have bad credit. You might have had a foreclosure in your past, in your history. You might have had a short sale on your record. You might not have the income. Maybe you're self-employed and you don't have, like, you know, what is it, a W-2 from your company? I always get it mixed up. Is it W-9 or W-2?
W-2.
Stated income, right? You work from home and you do odd jobs. You're a landscaper, you're a freelancer. So you don't have what the government or a traditional lender like Wells Fargo might ask from you. So this is a great way to get rental property, to get a property without having to go through all the hoops and hurdles that many people do when they're getting like a primary mortgage on their house.
Okay. But I also wanted to make the point, yes, it's great for you to sort of have a non-traditional way to get into the market. But also, it's a way for you to cash flow something right away if you do your homework. So on the property that we were talking about, we gave her, you know, a lump sum of cash. I think it was like $20,000, which was definitely more than she was going to make on the sale of that property. And then we were going to pay her, it was something like $400 a month, because that was what her monthly payment was on her existing note. Now, we figured that we could afford to pay her $400 if we rented it for $550 or above. And the market dictated that we probably could do that. So if we're renting it out for $550 and our note is $400, we're cash flowing $150 a month. And that works, right? It's not a ton of cash, but we're cash flowing on it. We can pay the taxes and we can pay the property manager. It's not a ton of cash, but it's a little bit. And at the end of this note, then we own something and that cash flow is all ours.
Right. We are immediately adding to our net worth with the purchase of this property on the backs of someone else allowing us to buy it from them. So that's, you're right. You're right about that. And the cash flow, the immediate cash flow, you just have to make sure that your numbers work. I would reference you back to my episode. You make sure you go back and watch the video or listen to the podcast where I talk about the three stages of real estate investing and what Gary Keller's model is. Remember, you're making sure that you're taking out that 40% for vacancy, repairs, and expenses, because you don't want to, you know, and we, because the house was already renovated and because we knew the taxes, that amount, that differential worked for us, right? The ROI was there. It was a high ROI and we were able to make the numbers work. Don't fall in love with real estate. Fall in love with ROI. Make sure those numbers work. Otherwise, it's going to be a crappy deal for you. So, and another reason why this is a benefit to a buyer. Now, this is a little high level ninja trick here. And I'm going to let you in on a little secret. And I did this. Now, one of my mentors in the business, Todd Toback, said, here's why seller financing is killer for acquiring properties if you can find these deals. Now, you're not going to find a ton of them every day, but if you find one, this is why it can be a killer strategy. Because you're agreeing to that maybe 10-year payoff or 7-year payoff with this seller. You're going to put down $5,000. You pay for a year, you pay for 2 years. Now, if you go back to the seller maybe 2 years later and you still owe $20,000 on the house, you could say, Mary, would you be willing to accept $10,000 right now? And we call this deal closed. I'll give you a lump sum cash check for $10,000. Now, bear in mind, that's half of what you still owed her.
She gets it all.
She gets it all right now.
Right.
I'm going to give you $10,000 today. I know we still have 3-4 years left on this note, but what if I just give you 10,000 right now and we closed and we wrapped up the deal right now? 9 times out of 10, that person is going to be happy to get a lump sum chunk of change of $10,000 rather than waiting an additional 3, 4, 5, 6 years for the remaining 10 spread out over those times.
They right.
can, and it, I'm telling you, you might say, no, they're not going to want to do that. But absolutely is the case that they do. And so what did I do with this woman?
So we actually got tipped off because we got a call from a third party mortgage buyer. Right. Mm-hmm. And they said, oh, so-and-so wants to sell her note to us. And so we wanted to verify that you are paying on the note and you're the current owners. And so we're going to assume this note and you'll pay us. And Clayton said, I don't want another note. I want to own it. So he called the owner and he said, hey, lady, I saw you're trying to sell the note. I guess you need some extra cash. How much are you trying to sell the note for? And she said, oh, about $7,000. And you said, I will buy that note. I will send you $7,000 tomorrow. It will be closed by the end of the week. This money will be in your bank account. Tell this other note investor to pound sand.
Right, and because we still owed. Exactly we owed happened. Like 15.
We owed 12.
Oh, 12, right.
And so we got a discount on that note of about $5,000. And then we got rid of her. She was a kind of a pain in my butt. She liked to call me a lot. And so I was super happy. I mean, she was a nice lady, but she definitely called me all the time and sent me text messages about like little tiny things. And so, yeah, I was super happy to be done with that note, be done with that monthly payment and buy that note at a discount and then not have to make that payment anymore. And now look, we bought that property for a discounted price. If you total what we paid for her down plus what we paid for her to pay off the note plus the year in between of payments, we got it for less money. And now the cash flow is completely ours. We don't have to deal with her anymore.
Right. And so how that all got wrapped up was I simply said, I'll pay for it right now. I'll call the title company. I'm going to wire over these funds. You just need to confirm with them that the mortgage is now complete. And what's that called when the mortgage is – when you're done paying a mortgage off?
Satisfied.
Satisfied, yeah, that the mortgage is now satisfied.
So I think so.
Yeah, I think they need to verify with you. She did. She called the title company. I wired the money. She considered the mortgage satisfied. They closed the mortgage. We received the deed in the mail a few weeks later from the county.
Pretty
Try doing cheap. That with Wells Fargo. It's not right. going to happen. I mean, that's what's known as like a short sale mostly, but it's not, you know, then you're going to hit your credit's going to get hit. That's not going to happen. And it's in reverse order. So you can't do this with a traditional bank. That's why seller right. financing is such a powerful strategy, because they're human beings in this negotiation. And nine right. times out of 10, they're going to be willing to take that lump sum payment instead of waiting another 10 years for you to get your act together.
As long as she didn't have like a structured note still with like a formal bank, she could afford to do it. She just wanted to take that money out. And both processes were pretty cheap with the escrow company. Do you remember how much we paid for those two? It was like hundreds.
Bucks, yeah.
It wasn't thousands.
So a couple things. Three key things I want to talk about with seller financing. Number one, I kind of mentioned it, the normal traditional route, right? You agree with the seller for maybe 5, 7, 10 years. You're going to pay them, you know, $5,000 down, maybe $2,000 down, and you're going to pay like 5% interest for 5 to 10 years, right? That's a traditional normal sort of mortgage. It's going to be amortized. The title company will set it up for you. You can get coupons or whatever. You can structure it that way to send out. That's fine. Second way is interest only. So you may even want to do more of an interest only option. So what that means is you can offer that person less for the purchase of the property and show the seller that he's going to get actually more over time. Because now they're going to make more on that. And then you can actually structure those from like 5 to 12 years with a similar, like a smaller down payment. So maybe $1,000 down. But you're going to pay them a little bit higher because it's interest only. So you could do that as well. Those are a couple of options. Another option though, another machine, I guess, is what you mentioned, which is the mortgage. What if they mm-hmm. still owe debt on the property? And that's important because you can still use many of these same options, right? The traditional route or the interest only, but structure it as a contract for the deed where the deed is held in escrow, because then that won't trigger that due on sale clause because they're not selling the house. Obviously, they're still paying a mortgage, but if right. you keep that, you structure it as a contract for the deed, but where the deed is still held in escrow until it's paid off for that underlying loan. So basically, it's just called subject to the existing mortgage. So they're being it's kept. So she's still paying her mortgage. You're paying her. She's then paying her mortgage. So it's kind of like a double dip there, if that makes sense.
Right, right.
That's a little high level. I don't want to get too in the weeds with it, but you may find a deal where she's like, well, you know, I wanted 100, I still owe 30 on it.
Right.
Great. Well, would you consider selling the house with seller financing? You'll still be able to cover your existing mortgage and you're going to actually make some more money. I'm going to give you a down payment. I'll buy the house from you subject to your mortgage. You can move. You can go to Kansas, wherever you want to move. I'm buying the house, but your mortgage will still be paid on time. I'm just going to be paying you on top of it, basically, like almost like subletting a house, you know?
Right. Now, most mortgages have a clause saying that you can't do this. If we were to do it for the house we live in now and the lender found out, they could then make the mortgage due in full.
But that's
so
point.
you have to read your mortgage. If you have an investment loan, that might not be the case. Investment loans are a little bit more lenient.
But that's why I'm saying you could structure it as a contract for the deed, not actually for the deed itself, but a contract for the deed. And then the deed is held in escrow.
Right.
That
right.
will not trigger the due on sale clause. So therefore, it's still held by Mary. You're just paying her. You have a contract
okay,
for
I understand
the deed.
What you're saying.
You see what
yep.
I'm saying? So it's still
yeah.
held in escrow.
Yeah. And a lot of times, you know, you may sort of come up with these terms and not exactly know how to structure the contract. And that's where the escrow person comes in. So you can agree, say, okay, I don't know why we're using the term Mary, but let's pretend that Mary is our distressed seller. Okay, Mary, I'm going to give you $5,000. I'm going to pay you this note for 10 years. Let's have, you know, and so you don't have to worry too much about the terms. The escrow person will walk you through it if they're experienced enough to know this. So, you know, I think why we wanted to do this was because this is not something that you're going to get from a turnkey provider. This is something you'll find because you're out there looking for deals and, or just keeping your, you know, ear to the ground and you hear about someone who wants to sell this property, maybe even at a REIA meeting. And you're like, oh, I know exactly how I can get this. This is a way to just add bit by bit to your overall strategy. But I think the real trick there is to sell it to the seller, right?
Right. And I was just about to say that, like, a lot of investors might not be educated on this. I mean, if you're watching right. this right now, and this is the first time you've heard of it, and you're a savvy investor, maybe you even own a few rental properties yourself, you're thinking about it, you've been listening to all the podcasts, you've been watching the videos. So you're actually pretty way more savvy than some investors are who own 5 properties that they inherited, and they've just been holding on to them. They might not even know that's what seller financing is. You need to educate them and
right.
tell them about the capital gains hit that they're going to incur by selling that property. If they sell it fully and they're done with it immediately, they're going to then have to pay a huge chunk of change to their taxes as a profit on that property. However,
even in my real estate book, which like is behind me when I got my real estate license, there was like one column about this in the book teaching realtors about it. So real estate professionals don't know. And everyone in the room was like, why would anyone do that?
Right.
And I was like, oh, I can give you a few reasons why you could do it because it works super awesome for both parties. But no one understood why, because they were all sort of traditional. We only represent people to buy homes they live in.
Yeah. Build it in as part of your
business model.
You know, if you're a wholesaler, maybe build it in as part of your overall pitch to a motivated seller who wants to sell. You know, don't just go the traditional route, but talk to them about seller financing and, you know, putting down $1,000 or $2,000. They may come back and say, hey, I want more money down. This is a great deal. You know, you're going to have to put down more skin in the game. You know, we talked about skin in the game here on the podcast. They may have to put $5,000 down, may have to put $10,000. But if you're getting a $60,000 house, you have bad credit, you don't have borrowing potential, you can't find properties, and this person's willing to get you started. I mean, a lot of people have started this way. Some of their first rental properties were seller finance deals that got them started, which is, you know, a great way to kickstart your rental journey. So anything else we want to talk about with this, or did we cover
I think we did. The goal was just so that people understood that this was one extra way to add to their portfolio. And, you know, Clayton and I were discussing this today, and most of the things we buy, we like to pay cash for them, but you know, we've had some good experience with it. So we were talking about it over breakfast and I was like, I would like to have a few more of those. That would be nice.
Yeah. And, you know, too, it's also good for the seller in a number of different ways. We talked about the tax reasons, but what happens if you walk away, right? What happens if you can't, you know, you're just dumb investor and you can't get it rented or et cetera. And you're like, oh, what am I going to do with this property?
You just flake.
Well, guess what? That landlord that you bought it from gets it back, right? You don't have to go through a foreclosure. Probably they get the property back. Now mm-hmm. it's back to in their hands and they can get it back up and running and cash flow it or resell it. They can resell it.
Plus they have your cash that you're never going to give back.
Your $10,000 that you already paid them. You know what? If you flake, they keep that and then they could just put it back out there on the open market or go to another investor and get another $10,000 down and rinse and repeat. I've definitely talked to investors that have done that where they've tried to sell at seller financing and for whatever reason, the buyer just kind of flaked on them and then they've kept their down payment. And they're now getting a second down payment. So in some ways, you know, not that you want that to happen, but really there's not a lot of downside in this at all.
But what if the seller, if you do a subject to and the seller just decides to keep your money and not give that to the mortgage company and the mortgage company comes after you, the new owner? Do you know?
Again. So wait a minute, because you still, Mary, are still responsible for paying your mortgage. Like,
what if Mary doesn't? And then the original lender wants the house back. Is there a risk there to you as the new subject to buyer?
Well, for sure. But you can then take over payment of the mortgage with the bank. And so if for some reason that owner dies or, you know, who knows what happens, you then can go to the bank.
Because you're on the deed.
Because you're right. You have a contract for the deed
right
in lieu of foreclosure. So then you can structure it that way. So a little more complicated, but yeah, you have like a fiduciary responsibility. You can go to the bank and say, hey, look, I've been actually paying for this. Can I assume this mortgage?
And I have the proper paperwork. And the bank's not going to say, no, get out of here. We don't want to be repaid. They're going to say, okay, as long as you keep paying us, thank you for letting us know.
Yeah.
Because real estate is an incredibly risky business for a bank.
Yeah. So there you go. That's a little overview of seller financing. I don't want to get too in the weeds with it. But if you have any questions, please post them in the comment thread below if you're watching this on video. And please share this with your friends, your loved ones, anyone else who you know wants to get started in real estate investing.
Hopefully we learned you something today.
That's right. As always, please subscribe, become a subscriber of the show. We publish the show multiple times a week. We have so many great shows in the archive, so please go back and check all of those out as well. So until we see you next time, go out there, take action, and become a real estate investor. Much love to you all.
Bye-bye.
Some crimes are never forgotten. Others are lost to history. Those are the ones we focus on in Crimes of the Centuries, a history meets true crime podcast revisiting murders, trials, and frauds that once dominated headlines. I'm Amber Hunt, your host and a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. If you like true crime that feels both cinematic and historical, find Crimes of the Centuries wherever you get your podcasts.